Today on Circular Stories, we focus on the maker movement. What we have in the past called artistry and craftsmanship, we now refer to as making, and we're seeing the growth of makerspaces even in places like libraries and community centers. We learn about a local makerspace where you can learn to make everything from a wood cabinet to a metal sculpture to a prosthetic limb. Stay tuned. Well, today we're talking about makerspaces and the maker movement. And we're joined today by Summer Reeves, who's the Director of Media Relations for TXRX Labs here in Houston, Texas, which is a premier, and I do mean premier, makerspace in town. Welcome, Summer.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, now, Summer, you know, for those of us who don't know or who are not familiar with this movement, what is making? And, you know, why not just call it, you know, woodworking or metalsmithing or crafting? What's the significance of that term?
Well, the term making is used to encompass a very broad group of people and activities. Makers can include inventors, designers, artisans, hackers, tinkers, hobbyists, musicians, and much more.
And, you know, I love that, you know, you hear that word hackers. Do you have a definition of the word hackers? I think a lot of times people think about hacking into computers.
Right.
Talk a little bit about hacking. What's hacking?
Absolutely. I mean, the term hacking definitely has a negative connotation a lot of times. and it is a lot of times associated with computers. But actually, hacking is a very broad sense of taking something and then making it do something it's not supposed to do.
Nice. I like that. So tell me, what is the history of this current maker movement?
Well, making is a very, very old concept. I mean, humans have been making since we became human. So the concept isn't anything new, but we are in a type of making renaissance right now. We've gotten to a point where technology and machinery are making complicated concepts and processes more accessible to the everyday person. In 2005, Make Magazine was started, which began the maker movement as it is known today. They marketed the term maker and makerspaces and helped to bring awareness to the idea and the overall movement.
I see. You know, it's funny you said in 2005. I'm trying to remember what was happening in 2005. That was before the recession. Why do you think that it kind of started then? Or why do you think it gained a formal movement maybe? Or start of a formal movement
Sure.
back in 2005?
Well, I mean, you're starting to see technology and software start to break out at that point. I mean, personal computers were starting to become really a thing around that time. Machinery and items are starting to become more easily accessible to people. People are starting to have that internet out there where
yes.
people can learn things and learn from one another and look up different concepts and making and ideas. So.
And, you know, that's interesting that you said that about the internet, because I'm pretty sure that you can learn just about anything in the world from YouTube or some similar platform such as that, right?
Oh, absolutely. I always tell people, I mean, I'm not that smart. I'm just really good at Google.
Well, you know, that's and it's funny that it's turned out that way. So. Now we have makers. We have this idea of a making. So we have to have somewhere to do that. So what is a makerspace?
Well, a makerspace is a publicly accessible place where people can collaboratively learn, design, and create. Houston has 6 major makerspaces in the Houston area and several smaller spaces in places like museums and libraries and things like that.
Oh, you know, the libraries. So that's interesting. Libraries and museums. I know that Harris County has a makerspace, at least one.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that libraries and museums are places that makerspaces would form?
Well, libraries specifically have really taken the idea of makerspaces and just run with it. libraries, I mean, you have the concept of information being out on the internet and books are now digital. So libraries are we're really starting to kind of die out and become a dinosaur. So they've actually done a really good job of realizing that they need to change their business model. And they went back and looked and said, okay, libraries are a place for learning. So getting back to that base concept, and they said, okay, so if physical books are not the way people are learning anymore, how are they learning? And the answer is by doing and getting hands-on, hands-on learning. And that's where makerspaces come into play. And having those tools and equipment and classes available at these libraries are amazing.
That is awesome. So I said that there's at least one Harris County library. Do you know of others?
Yeah, I believe the you also have to think makerspaces in general. It's a very broad term. So, I mean, when you think about makerspaces, everyone's different and has, you know, different capabilities and different classes and different machinery. You can have places that have complex, you know, woodworking and metalworking and facilities and equipment, or you could have something as simple as a small little 500 square foot lab that has a 3D printer. So you have a lot of the libraries aren't going to get into the heavy duty, you know, woodworking stuff,
right,
but they are providing things like small 3D printers and electronics and just hands-on like craft type things. And that's the type of thing that we're seeing like Harris County and the Houston Public Library System really get behind and start doing.
That is awesome. So the one thing I think about libraries, I think about they're very democratic, right? And they're accessible to all people. And you talked about how different makerspaces kind of specialize in different things. Tell me about the different flavors and the different personalities.
Absolutely. So each makerspace is different because every makerspace is made up of different people, which, you know, have different skills and interests. And makerspaces are heavily influenced by the community that uses the makerspace. And that dictates the type of tools and machinery and programs that that space has to offer. So, yeah.
That's cool. So
every flavor.
When people, when like-minded people get together, right, that probably tends to shape the personality of a makerspace, right? So
correct.
if it's people who like to sew or, you know, do that kind of craftsmanship, that probably is going to be the flavor of the personality.
Absolutely. What you're going to see is you're going to see a lot of times a makerspace starts small, and you're going to see the group of people, their interests are going to be what they expand on, right? So if you have a group of 10 to 20 people who are, like you said, interested in sewing or maybe costuming or things like that,
yeah,
then their programs and equipment are going to reflect that. They're going to have things like sewing and leatherworking and things like that.
That's awesome. Now, given the specific focus of a makerspace, okay, let's say what might one expect to find there? What kind of tools? What kind of classes? What would one find there in a makerspace?
Well, makerspaces typically focus on three main goals, and that's tools, education, and community. The most common tools or machines you'll find at most makerspaces, like I mentioned previously, are, for instance, 3D printers or laser cutters. Woodworking tools are also very common. Most makerspaces will offer classes to teach the community about how to use these tools.
Okay. So, and like we said before, well, at least for the Harris County makerspaces, the library makerspaces, they're accessible to just about everyone, right? So in the individual makerspaces, how does that work? Do you have... do you have memberships, or how does that work? Or we do it by the project, or how does that work?
Sure. Well, again, every makerspace is going to be slightly different and have a different business model. You have nonprofits, you have for-profits, you have schools which have makerspaces specifically for their students. You have publicly accessible ones which are open to anyone who wants to come in. So, for instance, there are some makerspaces, maker labs here in Houston, which are in colleges and universities, and that's going to be specifically for their students. There's also a lot of a lot of like hospitals and research centers are starting to do makerspaces to help with innovation and prototyping within their company. And a lot of specific companies, like, for instance, Baker Hughes has a technology center. They have what you would kind of consider to be a makerspace.
Wow.
But then you have a lot of what you consider your standard publicly accessible makerspaces across Houston. And those primarily are going to offer classes that are open to the public. You can go in. You don't have to be a member. You can take class, learn more, or just do a one-off just for fun. And then you also have memberships. So, for example, with our makerspace, you can come in, and if you take a class and you like what you're doing, you can come back and do a membership where you have access to the equipment and facilities for your own projects.
Right. Okay, so that's an interesting business model. And I'm going to get back to that idea of those business models that makerspaces have in a little bit. But, you know, I'm interested in the type of people that would find themselves at a makerspace. You know, are they hobbyists or are they professionals? Now, I know the ones that you said that are contained within companies, okay, those are professionals and they have a specific purpose. But what about just people who are in open makerspaces? And we're going to talk a little bit more about TXRX in a second. But, you know, just who are the people that one might find there?
Sure. Well, makerspaces are for everyone. We have children, we have engineering students, we have inventors, we have hobbyists, artists, programmers, and even, like I said, the casual person who just wants to take a unique class on a weekend and walk away with a cool project they made.
Right. You know, I'd like to think that I would be the type of person that could do that. You know, I guess In a makerspace with the classes and whatnot, you'd have some support and some help to help you complete the project.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, for instance, TXRX and most makerspaces, our classes, when you come in, they're for people who have never done this before. That's the point, is we're trying to make difficult and hard to reach concepts and equipment and ideas more accessible to the community. So we want someone who's never touched a woodworking tool in their life to come in and take a woodworking class and be able to make a cutting board, you know, and something cool. You can go home and see every day, hey, I made that with my hands, and be proud of that. That's the type of things that we offer.
That is actually really, really interesting and really refreshing. So since you started talking about your space, TXRX, tell me about that specifically. What's its history? And how has it evolved since its beginnings?
Well, TXRX Labs was established in 2008 with a very small group of individuals who wanted a place where they could bounce ideas off of people who had similar interests as themselves. From that original handful of people, TXRX has grown to over 40,000 square feet and over 300 members in only 8 years.
Wow, 300 members. Wow. So talk a little bit about the space. I have to, you know, full disclosure, I've been to the space before. So give me a good description of the space, you know, paint a picture so that, you know, our listeners can can feel like they're walking into the space.
Well, TXRX has a metal shop, a machine shop, wood shop, electronics, 3D printers, laser cutters, a photography studio, a ceramic studio, jewelry studio, and general art space. And we teach classes on all of this and more. So if you come take a class and, like I said, like what you're doing, we offer the monthly memberships where you can come back in and use our equipment facilities. But basically, we're constantly expanding. We're constantly adding new classes. We're constantly adding new equipment. And like I said previously, mainly based off of our community and our members and what they want. If we have a lot of members that say, hey, we want to learn glass blowing, then we do what we can to try to set up facilities and equipment and classes to be able to provide that.
So in some of your, so let's say in the woodworking part of TXRX, I have to admit, there's all kinds of stuff that I would not have ever imagined being in that type of space, maybe in a professional shop, but not in that type of space. Where does, let's say, the equipment for the woodworking part, where does that come from? You have donations, or how does that work?
Mostly donations, yes. Yeah. So we actually have a lot of members who have equipment or will buy equipment and actually will lease it or loan it to the lab for use. Some equipment is purchased by TXRX directly, but most of our equipment is actually donation from our members.
Wow. Even in the one of the things that you didn't mention that I think you have in that space is a plasma cutter.
That is correct.
And it's so interesting to see the variety of pieces and projects that people are working on. Talk a little bit about that.
So specific equipment, I mean, we have, like you said, we have plasma cutters, we have metal lathes, as far as our, you know, machine and metal shop, we have welding machines, we have MIG, TIG, and stick welders, we have a water jet, we have CNCs, we have, you know, in the wood shop, we have, you know, lathes and pretty much every, you know, table saw and type of saw that you could possibly want, router tables, you know. So all the main equipment that you would want in those type of facilities, we have. And then as far as in other areas, like I said, in the photography studio, we have, you know, your light, standard light setup, your backgrounds, you know. We try to stock everything that you would expect when we, you know, say we have that type of space.
And, you know, that's such a wide range. You said, well, in the metal shop, we have this. And, you know, and people do all these things. But then you went all the way over to the photography studio.
Correct.
Now those are two different type of.
Yes and no.
Yes and no. So talk about that.
Yes, it is. But what we want to do is provide people with a wide range of facilities and equipment where they can do new and inventive and creative things. So we want someone to go out and make a metal sculpture using the plasma cutter and welding machines, and then go over to our powder coating station and powder coat it and put it in the powder coating oven. And then we want them to come over to the photography studio, and we want them to take amazing photos of that and post it. And we want them to go to the art studio and paint it, you know, and we want them to rig it up with LED lights in the electronics area, you know. So, you know, the sky is kind of the limit when you have all of that there and at your fingertips.
That's pretty full service, I'd say.
It is. And an example of that. So for instance, when I first found the space about 3 years ago, I went in and took just about every class I could get my hands on, and people kept asking me, well, what are you planning to do with all this? I'm like, well, I don't know yet. I want to learn all of these techniques and I want to learn all of these skills. And then when I decide I want to do something, I know every option that's available to do that.
So that's pretty interesting. So you started out as a person taking classes. So how did that evolve into you becoming the media relations director?
So about 3 years ago, I was actually browsing Reddit and just saw a reference in passing to TXRX and classes. And so I was like, wait a minute, there's a place I can go and take like random weird classes that I've never been able to do before. And full disclosure, I am an obsessive, like, learn new things kind of person.
Oh, yeah.
So I pretty much fell in love with the space immediately. I went in, took all sorts of classes. I quickly became a member and started making my own things. I actually got heavily into leatherworking at the space, airbrushing, costuming, things like that, and actually started teaching the classes at TXRX. So I quickly became a member and instructor. And then the space is nonprofit, so the board of directors is voted in. So we had our previous media relations director decide to step down and do something else, and so I was voted in as media director.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Going from a member to working with the board in this way, that's actually pretty impressive. So, you know, makerspaces are, from what you said, about building community. So how does that manifest itself at TXRX? How do people work together, or people come in, they may come in as strangers, and how does that work? How does that work look like? What does that look like in process?
Sure. Well, the great thing about TXRX is that we have that huge community of members, and they're incredibly knowledgeable in so many areas. So, for instance, if I want to try something new, there's always someone at the lab that can give me direction or even help me out directly. We have forums where people can post and ask questions to the members, which is pretty active. And anytime someone asks a question, there's always a whole bunch of people providing suggestions and information and answers to those questions. If someone needs help with something, our members are really, really good about saying, yeah, I'll be happy to help you, and going out and walking that person through a technique or helping them out on a machine or things like that.
And see, that seems so different than what we think of, you know, just in real life, right? If you, you know, how do you get help with something that you need help with? Typically, you have to hire someone or, you know, or kind of seek expertise, you know, that you have to pay for. So you're telling me that at TXRX, people just help you?
For the most part. I mean, there's definitely certain things that, mm-hmm. you know, require, you know, payment for, you know, working on a specific machine that requires staff, you know, use, right. you know, and things like that. But the community at large is, you know, really, really helpful and really engaging and really, really friendly.
Wow. You know, I noticed when I went in that people have stations and things that they actually keep there. Mm-hmm. So there are probably people that come in all the time and work on their specific projects.
Correct. So we have different membership levels. So we have memberships where you can just have weekend access to the facilities and equipment. We have full week access. And then we have what's called table member access. And that those tables that you're talking about, those are the people that have paid to have their own dedicated space at the lab. So they have their own work area and they have a place where they can store their projects or materials and tools.
So you've been involved, you said, about 3 years, mm-hmm. right? So tell me, just even in that time, how it's evolved. How has TXRX evolved? And if you know anything about 2008 forward,
sure.
talk a little bit about that.
So the lab has grown crazy, as I mentioned before, just from, you know, 2008 to now. To have that large of a growth is just incredible. I'll meet people and say, oh yeah, I've been out to TXRX. I'm like, when were you out? And they're like, oh, a year or two ago. I'm like, come back. It's a completely different place. We have so much more now. So, I mean, just since I've been there, we added the general art space and started doing general arts classes there. And then since then, we've added a whole nother building, which is actually separate from our current building on the same like block area, that's added individual arts are spaces or studios that people can rent, and then also dedicated jewelry studio, ceramic studio, and the photography studio.
Wow. And how many square feet did you say before?
Over 40,000.
Oh my gosh. It's amazing. It's amazing.
We're the largest makerspace here in Houston, and we're one of the larger ones in the country.
Well, now we were talking about the members. So has anybody, you know, kind of taken things from amateur to commercial status there at TXRX? Any success stories?
Absolutely. So we have one example that. So there was one company that came in, and actually the group of people created this this pop-up monitor, and they created the original prototype at TXRX, and then they started a Kickstarter campaign here very recently. It's actually still in the middle of a Kickstarter. They were wanting $33,000 for their Kickstarter. They're now at over $500,000.
Oh my gosh, my gosh.
So that's just one example. I mean, a lot of people that come in, like I said, there's a broad range of people who come in, but a lot of people do come in specifically to prototype or to invent things using our facilities.
And it just seems that, you know, it's so much easier when you have a space that has pretty much everything you could think of in terms of equipment for doing that.
Well, just imagine, I mean, who can afford out there to have 40,000 square feet and have millions of dollars of equipment in their backyard? You know, mm-hmm. that's not viable for 99% of the population. So having spaces like this that can be public and community accessible is amazing.
So we were talking about personalities of the different spaces. What kind of people are drawn to TXRX as opposed to some of the other makerspaces? You talked a little bit about the fact that it's a lot of stuff. It's general. It's a lot of a variety of equipment and activities. So what are the type of people that are drawn to TXRX?
Well, creative people who want to learn something new or unique. We also have inventors and students who need a place for prototyping.
And you know what? Let me interrupt you about the students.
Sure.
A couple of people told me, like maybe engineering students mm-hmm. at some of the universities.
Yes.
Said, oh yeah, we go and hang out at TXRX to work on our projects. That's what do you think that offers that they don't get from their labs at school?
Sure. Well, not every college or university has a maker lab or maker space that the students and engineers can use. We actually have a partnership with some of the colleges and universities in the Houston area, specifically so their students can come and work at the lab. So having that space where they can work on projects and do things, and also keep in mind that some of the spaces and facilities at these colleges are small, and it might be hard to get in and actually use the equipment sometimes. So this offers an alternative for them for somewhere else.
Mm, that's awesome. That's awesome. Now, I'm just going to go back now to talking about the business model for makerspaces. How do they sustain themselves? You mentioned that TXRX is a nonprofit. Talk a little bit about the ones that are nonprofit and the ones that are for-profit.
Sure.
Talk a little bit about those business models.
Well, there's some makerspaces, like you said, that are for-profit and some that are nonprofit. Some spaces are going to focus heavily on grants and donations, while others create a more sustainable business model that provides income from memberships and classes. So each one's kind of different on what they focus and how they get their money. But it can be a challenge for a lot of makerspaces.
Yeah, you know, I was reading an article. It's actually a really good article on makerspaces. And it talked about some of the issues that they have and that some have closed. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the issue with that? Do you think that maybe they try to expand too fast? Or what do you think?
Well, makerspaces, I mean, as we talked about, like, for instance, TXRX has, you know, millions of dollars of equipment with our space, you know, but it can be really difficult to pay for a space and pay for all of that equipment. And a lot of times these makerspaces are being opened by, you know, these creative individuals that aren't necessarily business people. So a lot of these are very grassroots movement kind of things that come together, and sometimes they kind of get to a point where they don't have that base structure to allow them to continue growing, and they fall apart because they don't know how to do grant writing. They don't know how to go out and, you know, do marketing, you know, and they don't know how to, you know, be able to hire people to allow them to grow and pay for those people, you know, while doing everything else. So there's just not a lot of resources out there, honestly, for those type of spaces.
Wow. And one of the things I think you touched on before was the opportunities for collaboration.
Correct.
With universities and, you know, maybe even businesses.
Correct.
Could that be a source of income and help in sustaining a space?
Absolutely. And it does somewhat depend on where that space is located. I mean, in Houston, we're very lucky that we are a hub for manufacturing and innovation and entrepreneurship. I mean, Houston is one of the best in the U.S. as far as those are concerned. So we have a lot of opportunities here for people to go out and make those partnerships. But for some people that are maybe out in a very small town or small area, they may not have those same resources and connections to be able to reach out to.
Wow. So talk about the movement itself. Is it growing? And what's the outlook for it?
Sure. So absolutely. In fact, the Obama administration was very interested and supportive of the maker movement. In the past several years, the White House has made a focus of STEM education and even hosted science fairs at the White House. This year, they invited makers from across the country to participate in a one-day networking event, which I was lucky enough to attend. The event provided a platform where makers could voice their questions, challenges, and formulas for success. Out of that initial meeting, a nonprofit group called Nation of Makers has been created, which was announced actually in the past week, with the purpose of growing and supporting makerspaces and the maker movement across the United States, which is really exciting and a great step forward.
Now, going back to that event that you were said you were fortunate enough to be able to attend, you said that makers got a chance to ask questions. What were some of the issues that were coming up? What were some of the hot topics
Sure.
at that event?
Number one, money.
Money.
Always money, yeah.
The hot topic for every group.
So all makerspaces are made up of people who want to be able to grow and expand and get bigger and better equipment for their members, but you need money to do that. And then behind that, to make that money, you need to either A, as I mentioned before, be able to know how to get those grants, how to do that grant writing, or you need to know how to market yourself to be able to get people in and create a sustainable business model to be able to pay for that and allow your space to grow. So a lot of people were really asking a lot of questions related to those items and how do they get to the point to be successful.
How well attended was that event?
Oh, goodness. I think it was about 200 people.
Good, good, good. Okay, so that was the Obama administration.
That's correct.
And as you know, we have a new administration coming into office. What do you think will change? Do you think that there'll be the same level of support on that level? Or do you think that, you know, it doesn't matter? It's the grassroots that are more important.
I mean, my personal opinion, I don't see it being as much of a topic and direction for the new administration, because honestly, Obama was the first one to really put a main focus on that. So I don't really see that continuing. However, the nice thing about this new nonprofit that's been started up originating from the Obama administration, kind of helping that move forward, is that now we have that nonprofit that's separate from there to help continue pushing and, you know, providing support and materials for the community.
And what's the name of that again?
Nation of Makers.
Nation of Makers. So I'm going to be paying attention to that group to see, you know, just kind of what they're going to do going forward.
Yeah, and on one cool thing about that is, if you know Adam Savage, he is actually one of the directors for that. So that's really
Adam
cool and
ruins
exciting.
Everything.
You're right.
I love that show, and you know he does ruin everything. But you know it's always good. It stretches your mind. That is very interesting. Now I'm really going to pay attention to it.
Yeah, if you go and check out their website, I think it's nationofmakers.org, I think. There's actually a video of Adam Savage introducing the Nation of Makers that was posted this week.
That is awesome. That is awesome. So now let me just kind of switch gears here and talk about the maker movement and its relation to the current education system. You kind of talked a little bit earlier about, you know, the idea that you may have makerspaces in schools and in libraries. What is its relationship to the current education system and how might a school or a school system use this model that you've created to help with especially STEM?
Sure. I think it's extremely important. And we are seeing some schools reach out to makerspaces. We've collaborated with several schools in the Houston area, giving them ideas and recommendations for their own makerspaces within the schools. And this is, you know, elementary and high school as well as college and university. So it's across the board. But I think it's extremely important that we really look at our learning model. And right now, or previous to current day, has been very focused on book learning and not so much on hands-on learning. And it's incredibly important that we provide those opportunities for students to get that hands-on learning and really be able to dig into that STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, mathematics model, and be able to really dig in and, you know, do robotics competitions and put a focus on those science fairs. But rather than just go home and figure out something with no tools or equipment or, you know, direction, having makerspaces where students can go in and legitimately prototype and create things. I mean, you have some schools out there that are offering these things up, and you're seeing students go out and actually create viable inventions that are actually going into production. You're talking about 8 to 12-year-old kids being able to do that just because they're being given the opportunity. And, I mean, that has to grow. That's where our future is.
And let me tell you, as the mother of two students who have done science fair through the years. Of course, they're past that now, but it was always a very, very stressful time, mm-hmm. you know, to come up with ideas and then to try to run around and find equipment to do these things. It would have been wonderful to find a space like a TXRX to go and say, you know, here's what we're thinking of. Mm-hmm. How can you guys help, or how can we work with you, or is there someone here that could work, that, you know, could work with us
right.
to get some of those things done? It would be just wonderful.
And just having the knowledge. I mean, I know of one example. I don't remember the child's name, but he actually worked with the Harris County Library System, their makerspace, and with Patrick, who works there. And he came in and said, we want to make something for, like, it was like a big competition across the U.S. We want to make a way to for people in the field to be able to set bones. And they worked with them to figure out materials, and they were able to rapid prototype using 3D printers. And none of this would have been available to them information-wise or equipment-wise without them having access to the Harris County Public Library's makerspace.
And when you say set bones, like to set broken bones?
So as a like cast.
Oh.
So instead of like the type of cast that you were used to, they actually created like a spiral type thing where you could put your arm into it and it would hold the bone in place until they could get to medical attention. So kind of like a field dressing.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. I just, you know, and you talked about STEM. Over at TXRX, you have photography and you have jewelry making. So it's not only STEM, it's STEAM, correct?
Absolutely. So for people who aren't familiar with that term, because it's a little bit new mm-hmm. at this point, so STEAM is adding arts to the equation. And I think that's incredibly important because inventions out there, you can invent the most amazing thing, but if it doesn't really draw people to it, a lot of times it can be lost in translation. So you really need that artistic aspect. And there's some amazing things out there when you start combining engineering and art. You know, you have these amazing buildings and structures and things like that. So art is very, very important to that whole aspect.
And you know, that's the thing I hope that schools are seeing. I hope that current education is seeing is that art part is a major addition.
Absolutely.
To STEM. I mean, you know, when you think about design and you think about structure, you know, there's a beauty to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's that that aesthetic part of it that is, like you said, able to draw people in and to draw your imagination and your attention.
Correct.
Now, what about the sharing economy as it relates to the maker movement? You know, you hear a lot today about the sharing economy. And how does that relate to makerspaces and the making movement?
Well, that's a great question. I was actually watching a Big Think episode this week that was talking about kind of the same topic. Robotics in manufacturing is changing the marketplace. Software is increasing productivity in the workplace. Any jobs that focus on repetitive tasks are going to be automated because this is what robotics and software are good at. What they aren't good at is designing and creating and common sense things.
Common sense.
So the jobs of the future are going to include scientists, programmers, engineers, artists, and that's why STEM education is so important. And makerspaces are going to be a really important part of that hands-on education to really start, you know, pushing that out and creating that economy, you know, for people to move forward to.
And the one thing that I was thinking about is I was reading that article, and it talked about the diffusion of knowledge, right? So it seems like that a makerspace would be a really, really good way for knowledge to be diffused, you know, in a very, even in an inexpensive way. Talk a little bit about that, you know, that spreading of knowledge.
Well, you can do some really, so let's say you get a, you know, team of five engineers in a room and say, make something, okay? They're going to make something. It's going to be okay. But let's say you get a group of five disparate individuals that all have different knowledge and different background. So you get an engineer, you get an artist, you get a mathematician, you get, a scientist. They're going to come up with something so much better because you have so many different pieces of knowledge coming together into one thing. And that's what's really amazing is, Makerspace is having all those different types of people and all those different type of resources and being able to go in and talk to those people and learn from them. And like you said, that knowledge is readily available. So then that person takes that knowledge and then spreads it to another person and then spreads it to another person. And then you start being able to build off of that knowledge. And that's something that always amazes me is looking back. It's like, who thought to do that for the first time? And because they did, we've now taken that invention or that idea and we've built on it and we've built on it and we've built on it. And so with having the internet now and with having makerspaces now and having equipment like 3D printers and things like that out there that allow for rapid and easy prototyping and invention, you're going to see, as I said before, this amazing renaissance of invention and idea and innovation really coming over the next 5 to 10 years.
I like that idea of renaissance. And you mentioned that before. How do you think that's showing up in real life? That whole idea of, this renaissance of, of making. How do you think that's showing up? Is it showing up in TV shows or, how is that showing up?
Sure. Well, you're starting to, people are starting to really hear about making and makerspaces. So you have just the general knowledge that it's out there and available. That's starting to spread. But also you're starting to see people go and you're starting to see things like Kickstarter that are providing people. So you've got makerspaces that are allowing people to go in and actually take ideas, prototype them, and for inexpensive, you're starting to see manufacturing that's allowing small companies or small individuals to go out and start manufacturing things. You're seeing places like Kickstarter that's providing funding for these people to do things. So you're getting to a point where things aren't just being created and designed and manufactured by these huge billion-dollar companies.
Right,
you're
right.
Starting to see individuals say, I've got an idea. And I can make that happen. And they're going out and making it happen.
Yes, that, and I see that so much. And that's why I keep going back to this idea of, you've got a future that may not have as many traditional jobs as have been in the past. And then you even talked about even manufacturing is changing a lot where you have machinery doing many of the jobs that people have done in the past. Talk about the potential that this maker movement has on, a person's ability to make a living in the future.
Absolutely. So, like I said, the jobs aren't just going to go away, they're going to change. And so we as a society and as the world need to be ready for that and really need to start focusing on that. So as I mentioned, all these repetitive type tasks are going to go away and they're going to be automated, and that's great. But what we need to do is start really training our younger generation to be able to fill the gaps that are going to open up. So you're going to have more need for programmers to program those robots. You're going to need engineers that design the robots. You're going to need artists that can make things look beautiful and get creative and really, push the envelope on what we think is, the norm for today. So we need people that are going to be able to create the vision of what tomorrow is and then be able to sustain it.
Now, when you say those things, some people might get scared of that. Some people may be frightened of that, having to learn all these new skills and, and all these new traits and, sure, and things. How can makerspaces help with that? How can they help people ease those fears? It
sure
seems like that would be a place where maybe you could kind of learn that, this isn't so bad, that you can do this.
Absolutely. The change is always scary, but change is slow. It's not like we're going to wake up tomorrow and we're going to see all the jobs gone and robots have taken over the world. That's not going to happen. So it is
only in a bad movie.
Only in a bad movie. So change is going to be slow. And so what makerspaces are providing is that introductory into all these new concepts and old concepts. Honestly, I say new, it's actually kind of new to us, but it's really old concepts. I mean, woodworking, forging, robotics, engineering, all these are, you know, no, not robotics, but engineering, all these are very, very old concepts. And the difference is that in the past, these have been things that people have only been able to learn by going to college and spending 4 to 8 years learning these
things. Right.
What's amazing right now and gets me so incredibly excited is the open knowledge that is occurring, and not just makerspaces, but you've got MIT and Harvard putting out classes online for free, you know, that people can go and learn. We're getting to a point where you don't have to have a 4-year degree to go and learn engineering.
We have an open source world.
Absolutely. We're definitely moving into an open source world. So places like makerspaces are providing those abilities and options for people to come in without having to spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on an education. They're able to come in and learn a CAD software. They're able to learn programming. I know a woman who, she was probably like 50s, 60s, that came in not too long ago to the lab and said, I've always wanted to program. And she started taking programming classes. And she's like, I have an idea. I want to do this. And so she is coming to TXRX. She's learning programming at this point in her life. And she's so excited about it. You know, and that's something that who's had the ability to do that in the past without having to go back to school, which can be, you know, a very laborious process of, you know, getting admitted and then taking classes. And you have to take specific classes in specific orders. But now you can go and you can take that introductory class, get that idea and that concept and that base level knowledge, and then you can take additional classes, or you can go start learning on the internet and take these classes for $20, you know, and these programs and resources that allow you to really build and teach yourself at your pace.
And I love those stories like that. And in TXRX and other makerspaces, there are probably tons of stories like that.
Absolutely.
Tons of stories like that. So if a person were thinking about it, how would they get started?
Go online and sign up for a class. It's really that easy. You go and you purchase it online, you show up the day of the class. And the classes are so inexpensive. So first off, for us specifically, we're a nonprofit, and we actually don't make a lot of money on our classes. Most of the cost of our classes are material cost, because when you take a class, all materials are provided for you. Even some of our instructors do it for volunteer. Some of our instructors don't even get paid. They choose to do that because they support the organization and, you know, and what we're doing. So you can come in for very, very low cost, very, you know, low barrier of entry, you know, minimal time and effort, and come take something and say, did I like that? Do I want to learn more? Is that something I'm passionate about? And either A, you say, no, it was a fun class, but it's not something I want to pursue, and maybe try something different, or don't. Or you say, yeah, you know, that got me really excited. I'm going to take another class, you know, level 2 class that builds on that, and I can learn more concepts and more information about that, you know, technique or skill.
Nice. We talked earlier about this idea of sharing knowledge, and the fact that you have teachers that, you know, just share their knowledge and may not even get paid for it. That takes that to a whole nother level, a whole nother level. What if people are a little intimidated? You know, they think about programming and, or either woodworking or metalsmithing and all these things. Oh no, I could never do that.
Well, first off, people who know how to do those things aren't taking our classes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so don't feel like
that's a good thing to remember. Right.
Yeah. Everyone who comes and takes these classes have not, you know, mostly haven't done it before or haven't done it in a long time. Everyone that walks in and takes a beginner level class is a beginner. So we don't expect you to know anything when you walk in the door. If you take a woodworking class, we don't expect that you've ever held a hammer before. And that's okay. We're going to walk you through that. And we're going to take you and step by step show you how to do that. And what's interesting is, a lot of things like this. So let's say I said, oh, I took a metal forging class this weekend, or I did aluminum casting, you know, that sounds really scary and so far above you and so far away where you can't reach that, you know, but it's really not that hard. most of these things are just something that you've never experienced or you've never had the opportunity to do, but that doesn't mean it's complicated and that doesn't mean it's hard. It just means that it's different and you're going to go in and you're going to learn how to do those things. And in the end, it's something that's actually really easy.
Well, you know, two of the examples that you've given, especially about yourself and the woman that took the programming, those have been about women. So talk about that a little bit. Gender
sure.
differences or, you know, when you think about, you know, those type of things, woodworking and, you know, all the metal work and all that, you probably tend to think more along the lines that, oh, you know, this is a place for men and that's where men hang out and learn from each other. Talk about that, the gender effect.
Sure. When I first started at TXRX, actually, it was very male-dominated. Because like you said, I mean, that's something that typically men are more interested in the welding and more interested in the woodworking. And when I first started, we didn't really have the arts classes yet. So it was mainly, you know, really like, you know, in the shop kind of thing. But since I've been there, you know, we have a lot more women members now, and it's really starting to grow. And because A, we have that art space, but even women wanting to get into woodworking and metalworking, we actually have a new employee that's in charge of our education, who is a metalworker, you know, and she actually went to school and, you know, did that and came to work for us. And we were talking the other day, you know, she was kind of given a warning when she came in. It's like, you know, there's a lot of guys here. And she was like, well, have you had an issue with being in an environment with mostly men? And I was like, no, never. I've never felt, you know, like I didn't belong. I've never felt different. I've never felt like people thought I can't do something because I'm a girl. It's an incredibly, you know, invitive environment and very, very cohesive. And I've never once felt out of place as a woman.
You know, Summer, I have to tell you, you have inspired me. So I'm thinking now, what class do I want to take? Do I want to take one of the programming classes? Because it's something that I have always wanted to learn more about. You know, I was an engineer in undergrad, and I've been out of engineering for so long. And, you know, so many things have changed. I was thinking maybe I want to go back and, you know, take, you know, some kind of software development class or something like that. So now you have maybe inspired me.
Awesome. I'll have to see you there.
All I have to do now is find the time, because that is probably the biggest barrier for me is sure. finding the time. Well, we've talked about making, we've talked about the movement, we've talked about TXRX in general and specifically. What gives you hope? And then what would you like to see happen?
At TXRX or making
just
in general?
Just in making in general, at TXRX.
Sure.
And then finally, you know, what gives you hope about this movement?
What gives me hope is we are seeing forward momentum. We're seeing new makerspaces start up every day, providing, you know, access in specific areas. Houston's pretty big. So, I mean, there's a lot of times we'll say, you know, hey, we're located in East Downtown, and people are like, oh, well, I live in Katy, or I live, you know, in Clear Lake and places like that. But we're starting to have a lot of makerspaces in all of these areas. So people have a local makerspace nearby that they can go to. We're starting to see schools, you know, creating makerspace. We're seeing colleges. We're seeing companies. We're seeing all these places. We're seeing the Nation of Makers nonprofit being created. So we're seeing all of this stuff continue to grow and continue to gain momentum. So there is continual, you know, movement in that direction, which really gives me hope, you know, that there's, you know, all this new, you know, focus on STEM and STEAM, you know, so we are seeing everything move in the right direction. And I think we are going to see in the next 5 to 10 years, all of that grow. For TXRX specifically, we're always in a state of growing. So we're always adding new classes. We're always adding new equipment. We're always, you know, trying to provide what our community needs and wants. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Last question. Since you are growing so much, whose radar have you gotten on? Have you gotten on the city's radar, or, any other big entities? How's that working out?
To some extent, we've partnered with Schlumberger to do. They have a really big focus on STEAM. They do a lot of kid programs and outreach, which is great. So we've done kid camps with them, doing projects. We have worked with the city on, you know, projects and proposals for things that they're interested in doing. We have partnerships with colleges and universities. We have consulted with schools and libraries. So we definitely are on people's radar. But it's not enough, and that does need to continue to grow for us and for makerspaces in general. There's actually a thing called being a maker city, which just breaks my heart that Houston isn't one, because we are the epitome of a maker city with the manufacturing and small business and innovation and all the resources that we have here. We're the classic poster child to be considered a maker city. So what I would love to see is the city of Houston really pay more attention. I mean, we've talked to them on projects, but as far as them really understanding fully what the maker movement is capable of and what it can do for the city as far as creating jobs and creating opportunities and growing the city economy, I don't think they've quite understood yet what's available and what could be done with that. And I think that we all need to continue moving forward to, you know, try to push that and try to show them, you know, what we can do and get their support and backing.
Well, I think that is there it is now. You've put it out there. So hopefully someone from the city is listening, someone from the state is listening to take advantage of this tremendous resource that is TXRX, and that is the maker movement in general. I see the movement growing. Whoever's in office, I think now is the time. I think you're about to hit the tipping point. You may not have hit it just yet, but I think you're about to hit the tipping point with this. And I tell you, as the economy changes and as jobs as we know them kind of change and some go away completely, I think this will be the direction that we need to look in to keep, you know, the economy moving and to keep people making a living.
Absolutely.
If not having a specific job, at least having the ability to make a living. Well, I really want to thank you, Summer. Again, this has been a conversation with Summer Reeves. She is the Director of Media Relations for TXRX Labs here in Houston, Texas. Summer, thank you so much. We will be watching to see what happens with the Maker Movement and with TXRX specifically. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Circular Stories is produced by me, Roslyn Wyatt. You can email me at info@circularstories.com, and you can follow me on Twitter @CircularRoz.